You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The cuisine of Wisconsin just can't be beat. Cheese curds are a delicacy. Beer brats add a flavor like nothing else. We hold the record for a 125-pound cream puff. Are these Wisconsin foods near and dear to you? We did some checking with our colleagues. Here are some thoughts on cheese curds, Kringle, and, brace yourself, Wisconsin beer.
Well, when they're fried, it's not the same. Like, the non-fried ones are the real deal because they look like boogers and they're gross, but then you eat them and they're amazing.
I like Kringle. I don't love Kringle. They don't knock my socks off. They're fine.
Everyone who talks about Wisconsin beer always brings up Spotted Cow, which is tasty, but there are plenty of other really good beers. It's not like it's bad. It's delicious, but even that brewery has more exciting stuff.
All right. Well, what food, drink, and snacks do your friends, neighbors, and fellow Wisconsinites love that you think just don't hit the mark? Would you go as far as to say as an iconic Wisconsin food is overrated? Do you hate cheese curds or old fashions, but you've never fessed up for fear of retaliation? This is a safe food space at 800-642-1234. Daniel Higgins is the food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Northeast Wisconsin, and his recent piece that you can contribute to right now is called "Are Cream Puffs, Fish Boils, and Other Wisconsin Foods Overrated?" Vote now. Dan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me back. It's fun.
Well, these are fighting words. I'm not sure how fun this is going to be, Dan. But, Yeah. You know, what made you want to put Wisconsin's food and drink staples up for a vote?
It started kind of a combination of things. We were talking with some, at one point, I was having a discussion with some colleagues who are familiar with Door County and the whole fish boils up there, and talked a little bit about that. They kind of felt that it's kind of one of the more overrated things as far as food goes in the state, in terms of the fire's cool when they throw a little gasoline on it and you get this big blast of fire, but the food itself is, you know, kind of okay.
Fire is cool, fish is bland?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what we're getting at here, Dan?
Yeah, kind of like that, right? I don't know that boiling fish is necessarily... you know, deep frying it, obviously, it's more tasty, but I think that's more about the fry than the fish itself. I've noticed here and there I'll see comments about people kind of go on about how they think the cream puff is overrated and they don't understand why that's so popular. You know, so having noticed, you know, here and there you'll see, you know, comments through social media or whatever, and then just from doing different stories and seeing what kind of response I get from readers about a lot of these classic foods. So I thought, well, let's put it out there and have everybody cast their votes about how they feel about them and see which ones are really beloved and which ones are kind of like, not so much.
So how have readers responded so far?
We've gotten quite, last time I checked, we were up close to like 2,000 votes or people voting.
Nice, yeah.
Throughout the thing, that was a couple of days ago. So, the brats and the cheese curds are leading the way in terms of the amount of love they're getting. And, the fish boils and a couple other things are down a little bit. I was actually surprised. The old fashions and the Bloody Marys aren't quite as high as I thought they would be, honestly.
It sounds like you're checking your stocks. You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Futures trading of Wisconsin's iconic foods. So, you know, a lot of our foods are wrapped in traditions, and they're like about ceremony. You go to the State Fair for cream puffs, the Friday night fish fries, the Door County cherry picking. How much do you think those traditions have influenced and our love for certain food and drink, just the ceremony of what you do around them?
I think that's huge. I think that's everything. That's why some of these foods have risen to where they're at. They're connect us. They're part of our heritage. This is Wisconsin. This is what you do, and this is a lot of times a unifying thing. And like you said, you know, you go to the supper club, you have an old fashioned, because that's just kind of that's the experience. And I definitely agree with that.
Well, you have found so far 85% of survey respondents said they love brats. 82% said they love cheese curds. We can't get 80% of Americans to agree on anything right now.
Exactly. So, yeah, I would say that's a big, those are big wins, you know, in terms of like getting some sort of consensus. So that's good to see that we've got something we can come together on.
Well, I wonder, you know, is it the food itself? Is it that brats are just reliable in terms of how you cook them? I mean, cheese curds are pretty finicky. So what is it about these two foods?
I think with the bratwurst, you've got, again, there's that German heritage kind of feeling about it. I think I don't think you can underestimate, you know, obviously Johnsonville. I mean, when years ago when they hit, you know, one and they kind of went national, and I think that whole, you know, Charlie's Cooking Johnsonville Brats campaign probably didn't hurt anything. And then you think about all the local little meat markets that's in your area that where you can go and get, you know, from the local butcher who makes their own brand of bratwurst. So it really comes down to that level, and I think the cheese curds do that too, that everybody's got a dairy maker somewhere in their region or close to them that they feel like really connected to it. So it's like I'm supporting, you know, if you're Renard's cheese or whoever it is, or, you know, everybody's got their own place that makes cheese curds, and those are fresh, I get it. But then when they're deep fried, then it's, you know, the local restaurant that has their own special, you know, batter or breading that they put on the cheese curds before they deep fry them. So I think that's it. It's both statewide, but yet super local at the same time, and I think people like that.
We're getting the straight story on Wisconsin foods with Dan Higgins. He's a food and drink reporter based in Northeast Wisconsin. Gathering your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. What makes a great brat? How do you really feel about cream puffs? Do you love them, or do you think it's just too much cream, not enough puff? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Joe now in Grafton. Hi, Joe.
Well, I'm going to nominate the prime rib for my overrated Wisconsin food. This is a supper club state, and for years the staple at supper clubs was the prime rib. I think it's way too much fat, way too overrated. And I'm going to nominate one that I think needs to be praised, especially here in Milwaukee, which has been a staple. Raw beef and onions on a great piece of rye.
Oh, my goodness.
What I have for you.
Joe, that is a lot for us. Dan Higgins, first of all, the prime rib.
Yeah, that actually didn't quite make the cut. There you go. There's your pun of the day. for the ones we voted on. But that actually is another one that, you know, kind of thought about because it is kind of the staple of Saturday nights. And that is another one where I do get a lot of people who are really split about whether they really like it or really just think exactly what the caller said there. It's just overrated. It's fatty. It's, you know, it's so rare.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of places that don't necessarily do prime rib well. And once you've had kind of a bad piece of it, you get a little, you know, a little shy of trying it again. And especially it's usually, you know, one of the more expensive items on the menu too. So.
Yeah. Dan Higgins, our trusted food guide. He's the USA Today Network Wisconsin food and drink reporter. Bratwurst, Kringle, Bloody Marys, we're talking about all of them this morning. Want to hear from you. What's your take? What makes a good Bloody Mary? What makes a bad brat? Do you love Wisconsin frozen custard? Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this Wisconsin weekend in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about Wisconsin food and drink that gets too much credit for being tasty on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we floated the idea of underwhelming Wisconsin eats around WPR, and it generated some discussion about love-hate relationships with our iconic food here, especially when it comes to fish boils.
They've got this presentation before they actually serve it, in which they show you how they make everything, and then there's the big fireball, and it's, yeah, fish boils are cool.
But then you have to actually eat the fish, and it's like this soggy boiled fish with no particular flavor, and it's terrible.
I tell you what, the white fish and the potatoes and the Door County cherry pie a la mode that come with that fish boil are one of the best meals I continue to have, and cannot overstate that.
Did I mention love-hate? What Wisconsin foods are nostalgic for you? Which ones are tradition? Do you always get a State Fair cream puff? Perhaps on a Friday fish fry. We can go there. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dan Higgins is our guide. He is a food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. Dan, you're also polling people's thoughts on the experiences that come along with food and drink. You're asking about supper clubs and fish fries and fish boils. You know, let's go in a little bit deeper here on the fish boil experience. What is it like?
Whoever was on there kind of describing it really hit it, you know, on the head in terms of, you know, it's you go there, it's they kind of show you what they're doing. You get this big blast of, there's this big kettle out, and it's usually, you know, just outside the restaurant right there where you're going to end up sitting. And they have this fire going, this big kettle with, you know, water in it and seasonings of some sort usually. And then at one point they'll take a little canister or can of gasoline or some sort of, you know, accelerant, throw it onto the fire, and it creates this big, you know, woof of fire, which is, you know, cool. It's kind of like being at a heavy metal concert, which, you know, for me is, I enjoy those. and then it boils it up, and then you get, the white fish as the fish of choice, you know, which makes sense. I mean, it's a very Wisconsin fish to use. It's still very, you know, thriving in our big lakes around here. And, you know, that with some potatoes or corn cobs maybe sometimes, or other items, depends on, you know, everybody does a little bit different on a plate, and that's it.
Well, let's shift over to drinks. When it comes to Bloody Marys, the tomato juice cocktail, 24% of respondents said they hated them. 28% said they felt meh about them. This one is a little bit surprising. 52% of people that would pass on the brunch ritual of a Bloody Mary. So what are your thoughts on cocktails?
I think the Bloody Mary doesn't surprise me too much, because I think a lot of people are, I think the tomato juice portion of that can really turn people off. I think that's where people kind of drift away from that. So that one didn't surprise me so much, although the way people do them up with so much, you know, so many toppings and so many, I mean, kind of go over the top with them. I think that part of it probably carries it through. I think people might be even a little conflicted, like, well, gosh, I'd love to have, like, all this stuff that's in there, but I don't know if I want to actually drink the tomato juice. I don't know. And the old fashions are, you know, doing pretty well. I thought those, and actually the beer is even a little bit low in terms of response of how much love it would get. You know, I thought those would be slam dunks. Like, I thought those would be up there right there with the cheese curds and bratwurst. So those are a couple of a little bit of surprising areas, and the way people respond to stories I write about these topics, usually is very strong, very, very good. I mean, so I'm a little surprised on, they're doing very well, but just not quite as well as I thought they might do.
What are people feeling about their berries? Cranberries, Door County cherries? What were responses like there?
Yeah, the cranberries, which is, by the way, our state fruit, which is like only, there's two foods that are have official state status, the Kringle and the cranberries, and as being official state whatever pastry and fruit. But yeah, the cherries are, people like their cherries a little bit more than they like the cranberries, that's for sure. And again, I get it. There's a little tartness there. So it's not cool. A little bit tart, more tart than even the Door County cherries, which are, you know, also typically a more of a tart cherry as well. So
why is it?
Maybe the state legislature needs to rethink which is our state fruit here. So
why is it important to specify that these are Door County cherries?
Because that's where they're grown. There's just because of that, the way that peninsula is there, it just provides this. The geographic nature of Door County allows cherries to grow there, because you have to have certain conditions with the winds coming in and off the lake and certain temperatures and everything. So that's kind of why I kind of specified, you know, made it specifically the Door County cherries.
There's a whole section of the poll for meats and cheese. How could you possibly narrow down which items to include there?
Yeah, that wasn't super easy. Like I said, you know, there was the prime rib question. There was some of that. So I kind of just thought, all right, we're just going with the big hitters, the bratwurst, the brosa chicken, and the cheese curds. And then I decided, just part of me is kind of experimenting too and seeing, okay, how big of a deal are these among egg rolls, which are very popular kind of through the Fox Valley, I think central part of the state too. I was kind of curious to see, like, statewide what kind of reaction that would get. So that's kind of why I put those in there.
How did they do?
They're, you know, kind of at the love and the meh are about equal.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that could be an indication, too, of a lot of people just haven't been exposed to them.
How did frozen custard do?
That's up there with the cheese curds and the bratwurst. It's in the 80-some percent range. I mean, these could still change a little bit. But, yeah, that's, I think, number three in terms of the amount of love it got, which, again, doesn't necessarily that I kind of expected that would be a top one. Yeah, actually, it's tied with cheese curds at 82%.
How much do you think that the restaurant Culver's has to do with that?
A lot. I think they probably have a lot to do with that, but you know, it's been around long before that. I mean, they kind of Craig, you know, when I talked to him last year, kind of mentioned that a lot of that inspiration came from Milwaukee frozen custard shops, and I think there's the small frozen custard shops everywhere in the state. So I think they kind of helped kind of take it to the next level, the way Johnsonville, I think, you know, help take brats from, you know, kind of this local thing to this kind of national attention. So I think they had some effort in that, but I still think it's everybody's got that, probably that local little custard shop somewhere,
sure,
that custard shop that they like to go to. That's, you know, it's a family experience. You know, you went there the first time your parents took you there, you know, or you went there on a date in high school or whatever it is, and it starts to bring, you know, it, again, like, I think you hit the nail on the head with the whole, there's an experience, and there's part of it that ties us to this food and elevates it. You know, I think someone coming in from out of state the first time they have some of these things, they're going to be like, well, I don't know what the big deal is, but they don't have that background of those moments of, you know, grilling brats in the backyard with your dad or mom or whatever.
Well, Dan, we have some time here to listen to a few more responses from our people over here at WPR. Let's take a listen.
I love brats. Brats are great. I've been eating them pretty much my whole life. I could probably eat them every day before I would start to get tired of them. Whether they're pan-fried or grilled, they're great. Put them on a plain bun. You don't even need to dress them up with anything.
So there's the brats. Let's hear.
There you go.
Yeah, let's hear another one.
I hate beer. I know I am in Wisconsin, but I hate beer. It's been my shame for years.
And one more, Lee?
I can speak in support of the brandy old-fashioned. And I will take it sweet, but not with a sugar cube, with the juice from the maraschino cherries. Paired with a fish fry, can't go wrong.
So, Dan, there you have it. What is next once you get all the results in? What are you going to do with this?
Well, I'll compile once we have the final results in. Obviously, I'll compile it, and we'll do a little write-up. I'll see, kind of collect up any, you know, if there's any really insightful posts on our Facebook pages, or if anybody leaves a kind of an interesting phone call or anything like that, and pull it together, maybe even try and get in the hold of a couple experts and talk a little bit more about, you know, why some of these maybe did so well and why others didn't.
Oh, yeah, you'll follow up on the morsels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's so much fun to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Dan Higgins is the food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Northeast Wisconsin. And his recent piece that you can contribute to right now is called "Are Cream Puffs, Fish Boils, and Other Wisconsin Foods Overrated?" And to cast your vote, go to greenbaypressgazette.com. You can also find the poll on WPR.org at the morning show page. And if you can't get enough of sharing your opinion, take WPR's Why Wisconsin survey about the best beer labels from the Badger State. That's found at WPR.org/Wisconsin. It is Wisconsin Weekend here on the morning show. Coming up, a wildlife representative is quacking his way back into the hearts of Wisconsinites. We'll meet Thirsty the Duck after this news update on the Ideas Network. Step aside, Smokey the Bear and Ranger Rick. Thirsty the Duck is back in action, and we're talking about this male mallard's revival on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thirsty the Duck first met the public at the Wisconsin State Fair in 1961. And back in the day, Thirsty was the mascot for the conservation group Wetlands for Wildlife. Now he's back on the job promoting wetland conservation. Do you live near a wetland, or do you have wetlands on your property? What type of wetland do you have? How long have you lived there? How do you keep your land and water healthy? We're at 800-642-1234. Brian Mookie is a hunter, originally from Elkhorn. He resurrected Thirsty the Duck, who is a public symbol meant to protect and preserve Wisconsin's wetlands. Brian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, good morning. Thanks for having Thirsty and me with you this morning. Glad for the opportunity.
Very good. So for those who haven't met Thirsty or who aren't familiar with him, who is Thirsty the Duck?
Well, Kate, Thirsty's been around for a long time, almost 60 years. Thirsty the Duck was first introduced in 1961 at Wisconsin State Fair Park, and he was a symbol of a new organization named Wetlands for Wildlife. You see, back in the 1950s and 60s, organizations like Ducks Unlimited were protecting wetlands and investing in habitat in Canada. But during this time, wetlands continued to be drained in the United States, and it seemed there was little interest or effort by any organization in protecting wetlands here in the United States. So five sportsmen from Wisconsin, one of them being the world-famous artist and conservationist Owen Grammi, together started an organization called Wetlands for Wildlife. Now, this fledgling organization first started in the 1960s, soon had chapters and members across the country, and the organization had a real simple mission to preserve the wetlands of our country.
But it didn't really last that long. It was like 6 years, and then that went away. What happened to Thirsty?
Well, you know, Thirsty went into retirement. I'm not sure. There were reports of him down in Texas and Florida, but he always seemed to head back in spring, head north. So he's been dormant for a couple of years in kind of perpetual migration.
So how did you find him? How did you resurrect this artwork?
Well, part of it is my family's from the Horicon Marsh area, from the Mayville area, and Thirsty's origins really started there in Mayville. They had a very active chapter of Wetlands for Wildlife in the Mayville area, and Thirsty was actually created by a gentleman that worked on the Horicon Marsh. He was actually a wildlife manager working for the state of Wisconsin. He actually created the artwork for Thirsty, and then the organization adopted him and really brought him to life and pulled him off the page.
And you have a really strong connection to the outdoors, to hunting. It's really in your lifeblood. Why take it upon yourself to bring Thirsty the Duck back?
Well, you know, I think part of it is what the outdoors have done for me. You know, it's been such a big part of my life. And then if I look back at my mentors and even look back at all of the other conservation leaders and what they have done through the years, this is really, you know, just I look at my personal responsibility to, you know, in my time to do what we can to, you know, even if it's just myself, to do more for wetlands. And, you know, by bringing Thirsty back, kind of communicating that message to others. I think that's something a lot of hunters have. It's part of their sportsman ethos, is that connectivity to the outdoors and also the respect and responsibility that comes with that activity, just because of that close connection that they've built with the outdoors, may it be wetlands or the wildlife.
And so when you're out and about with Thirsty, what type of message are you trying to send about our wetlands here in Wisconsin?
Well, right now, Thirsty has really come back, pardon, and out of frustration and disgust. And that's coming back to the Wisconsin State Waterfowl Stamp. The stamp hasn't been increased in over 20 years. And the, you know, this is a stamp that is purchased by duck hunters, but really should be purchased by anybody that cares about the outdoors, whether you're a birder, a paddler, an outdoor enthusiast, because 100% of the revenue generated from the Wisconsin Duck Stamp goes right towards the management of our wetlands. It doesn't go to buying more public land or buying more wetlands, but it goes to managing and improving and the wetlands we already have. So he's really coming back to kind of gather public support, create public awareness, and really public engagement to send a message up to Madison and say, hey, let's give our ducks a raise.
Brian Mookie is a hunter originally from Elkhorn. He has resurrected Thirsty the Duck, who is a mascot meant to protect and preserve Wisconsin wetlands. You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you live near a wetland, or do you have wetlands on your property? What type of wetland do you have? How long have you lived there, and how do you keep your land and water healthy? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Brian, the Horicon Marsh Bird Club says over the years there have been a total of 304 species of birds spotted there. Hundreds. So when you've hunted in Wisconsin, what's it been like to see these ecosystems within Horicon Marsh?
Well, you know, it's really wonderful. I like to go out on big wildlife areas like the Horicon Marsh because, you know, number one, you can get lost in them. And I don't mean physically lost. I mean getting away from the distractions of life, and you can get lost and really be present in the moment. In areas like the Horicon Marsh and other wetlands, like you said, the vast variety of birds, you never know what you're going to see in the morning on the marsh. So it's really wonderful to be able to escape. And really, it's just a short drive away from, depending on where you live. There's so many opportunities in Wisconsin, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes away to really escape into a wetland and see all of the life that is out there.
How has the marsh changed or evolved, if anything, since you were a kid?
Well, I think what I've seen more so is, you know, I guess it's from runoff. You know, we see more sedimentation in the marsh. You know, areas that were deeper have now filled in and are shallower. We're also now seeing more invasive species. So, I mean, that's something that we need to be more concerned of. But in relationship to the amount of birds, I think to some extent, you know, us duck hunters have always complained there's never enough birds in the air, or never enough ducks coming into our decoys. But that's been something that's been common for a number of years, and our duck populations are very healthy. And our wetlands are still a wonderful place to be enjoyed.
The Wisconsin Wetlands Association says our state used to have 10 million acres of wetlands. Now we're down to 5 million. Why is that? Where are they going?
Well, you know, some of that even, a lot of it is because of development, and when you, and also over the course of history, agriculture, you know, coming in, changing the landscape to to produce crops and so forth. And actually back in the 50s and 60s, when we first started talking about wetlands for wildlife, there were actually government subsidies to actually drain wetlands. So things have changed quite a bit, but there's still a number of, you know, issues. It's still a fight out there to keeping our wetlands from being drained, filled, and polluted. So they play such an important role. I mean, in big public issues right now, clean water, flood control, that all comes down to wetlands. And when we lose these wetlands, they're actually like sponges. They hold the water, they slow it down, and then they filter that water. When we remove all these sponges, all of these wetlands, that flow just increases. And with that comes erosion, sedimentation, and that just trickles downstream, which affects our aquifers, our clean water, and then you got more flood damage and everything else coming further down.
So where does the Wisconsin waterfall stamp fit in here? It's $7. How does that impact wetlands?
Well, like I mentioned before, the wetlands, the waterfall stamp is used 100% for the management and improvement of the wetlands and actually also nesting habitat. So this stamp revenue isn't going into a general fund in Madison. Actually, by state statute, 2/3 of the revenue is spent in Wisconsin, and 1/3 of it is also spent in projects in Canada. In fact, every year, most of the stamp revenue in Wisconsin is used to improve wildlife areas on public lands, areas that we all enjoy. So, and another thing, Kate, your listeners might not know is that the state of Wisconsin currently manages over 278 miles of dike, 656 water control structures, and over 1,000 impoundments. Now, this wetlands infrastructure deteriorates over time, and the costs associated with maintenance and management only continues to increase, while the revenue from the state duck stamp has not. And each year, you know, many of these habitat projects requesting stamp funding are turned away simply because there's not enough money available in the state waterfall stamp fund.
And the stamp hasn't increased in price since the 90s, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. 1997 was the last time we saw an increase, so it's been 20 years.
So that's quite a while in order to be able to pay for a lot of these projects that could perhaps really help preserve wetlands around Wisconsin.
Right.
What are some of the big projects that you see benefiting wetlands that are really productive?
Well, in we've seen a lot of money go in large wetlands like the Horicon Marsh, but also in smaller wetlands scattered throughout the state. So it's really across statewide that you're going to see that these funds are going and making improvements. So like I mentioned, it might be water control structures, it might be ditches, and all of this is to hold water for waterfowl as they're staging or as they're breeding. And it's not just waterfowl, it's all of the other animals. It's a huge ecosystem. I mean, if you've ever been to a marsh, it's amazing the life. You scoop a glass of water, and it's amazing everything that's swimming around in it. It's just like, wow, what an ecosystem. And that is really benefiting all the wildlife, all the birds, and so forth. So it's really an amazing area.
Thirsty the Duck has been brought back to life. His mission is to convey that ducks need habitat, ducks need marshland. He was originally a cartoon character drawn up in 1960. Do you belong to a conservation or hunting organization? What's your message? Should preservation efforts change in the state? We're at 800-642-1234. Brian Mookey is our guide. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with more Wisconsin Weekend in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the revival of Thirsty the Duck on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The 2019 version of Thirsty has a platform. He's making a case for increasing the price of the Wisconsin waterfowl hunting stamp. And the stamp is required of waterfowl hunters in the state. It costs $7 or so and hasn't been raised in more than 20 years. Are you a birder or outdoor enthusiast? Have you ever been to Horicon Marsh? What plants and animals did you see there? What was it like? Are you a waterfowl hunter? Where do you go to hunt in Wisconsin? How would you describe the current conditions of our wetlands? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brian Mookie is a hunter who resurrected Thirsty the Duck to be a symbol meant to protect and preserve wetlands, and he stays with us. Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Tom joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
The wetlands benefit everybody. A lot of people, in the big picture, they allow the evaporation of water up into the sky, and then the water comes over and it drops on the farmers' fields. And if your fields are watered enough, your production goes up. And most people don't realize this, how very, very important, how money in your pocket, it will actually put money in your pocket, in your bank account, if you keep your wetlands in shape, and all around the country. And one, we've destroyed most of our wetlands, so it's very, very important, and there's the profit and there's benefit to it.
Tom, thanks for the call. Brian, you've heard a lot of public support to increase the price of the waterfowl stamp for hunters, and you've met with lawmakers. What have they said?
Well, Kate, that's exactly right. I mean, we've got the hunting community, the duck hunters that are required to purchase this stamp, and they're supportive of the stamp increase, and the organizations that represent them support it. And that's, you know, another reason back why Thirsty came back is it's frustrating that there's a coalition of support, and in fact there has been for several years, and therein lies our frustration, I guess, with our politicians. I mean, we've got hunting organizations like Ducks Unlimited, Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, Wisconsin Conservation Congress, and other organizations that represent the waterfowl hunting community in Wisconsin, and they've supported an increase in the price of the stamp for many years, but every year it seems our representatives in Madison either don't get the message or they don't listen, whether it be assembly members, senators, or our governor. Each year our ducks and our wetlands lose.
So how does our price for the Wisconsin waterfowl stamp compare to other states?
Well, that's actually a good point. You know what? I kind of, you know, have some pride and always thought that, you know, Wisconsin was a leader in conservation. I mean, we've got such great champions in the state's history, like Aldo Leopold, Gaylord Nelson, Owen Grammy, Lewis Radke, and many, many others. So feeling a little Wisconsin pride, I compared the state duck stamp prices in other nearby states. And quite frankly, I was disappointed to find hunters in other states doing much more. For instance, in Michigan, hunters pay $12 for a stamp. Iowa, $11.50. Ohio, $15. Illinois, $15.50. Yet Wisconsin state stamp is only $7. I think hunters in Wisconsin are willing to do a little bit more for our wetlands.
So in the last minute or so we have with you, can you tell us if we would like to meet Thirsty the Duck? He'll be making an appearance at the Horicon Marsh Festival this weekend. What will that be like?
Oh, I that'll be a fantastic time. The Horicon Marsh Bird Club put on a wonderful event. It's a great way to connect with the Horicon Marsh and really see its importance and value to wildlife and to birds. And they put on a great program full of activities for the whole family. Thirsty will be there Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 12 at the Horicon Marsh Visitors and Education Center. So I really encourage everyone to come out to the Horicon Marsh.
And since Thirsty has come out of retirement, are there other dates on Thirsty's calendar?
You bet there is. He's also going to be at the Midwest Outdoor Heritage Education Expo. Now, I'm told that this is like the largest outdoor skills fields trip in the country. Over 3,000 students attended last year, and that's on Wednesday, May 15th and Thursday, May 16th in Poinette, Wisconsin. And then Thirsty will be back in the Horicon Marsh on Saturday, June 22nd for the annual Paddle the Marsh Water Tour. So there are a number of wonderful events to meet Thirsty the Duck and also enjoy our Wisconsin outdoors.
Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Brian Mookie resurrected Thirsty the Duck, a mascot with a mission to protect and preserve Wisconsin wetlands. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a look at the history of Wisconsin's name.
We recently received a flurry of questions through the Wisconsin Project from the fourth grade class at Mineral Point Elementary School. Most of the questions were about the state of Wisconsin. Questions like, how did Wisconsin get all of its cows? And who invented the state dog? we sent WPR's Mary Kate McCoy to investigate.
When I saw these questions come in, I got really excited. It's because I'm from Mineral Point, and one question in particular stood out to me, from Josie Dunn. Because, full disclosure, I've known Josie for a long time.
Josie, we know each other, don't we?
Yeah.
How do we know each other?
You were my old babysitter.
Mm-hmm. We had some fun, didn't mm-hmm. we? You wrote a question to Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and what was your question?
How did Wisconsin get its name?
And why do you want to know the answer to that?
Because Wisconsin's a really unique name for a state, and I just really wanted to know why it was mainly called Wisconsin.
And what do you think the answer is?
Maybe the person who, like, lived in the state didn't really have a name yet, maybe made Wisconsin a state and named it after him.
And are you excited to find out the answer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that's a somewhat tricky question to answer. But what we do know is that it came from the Algonquian language family, spoken by Wisconsin tribes like the Menominee, Ojibwe, Potawatomi, and Mohican. And it certainly was not pronounced Wisconsin.
I was always told it was Wiscosec, and some people have said Wiscosin. There's a Wiscoset, a Wiscosec.
Napus is an elder in residence at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, a member of the Menominee tribe.
To translate that would be basically the first part come from the word rescue, which means something good, and that ending is more, what you would say, locative. Then you would say a good place to, like, camp or to make a clearing or to basically live.
Rand Valentine is a University of Wisconsin-Madison Linguistics and American Studies professor. He offers another interpretation.
The word Wisconsin originates from an Algonquian language word, meskusing. And Meskwesing is probably Miami, Illinois language, but possibly Ojibwe. It's a little bit uncertain, and the word translates as where it lies red. And the best guess is that's making reference to the red cliffs around the Dells.
But once the French got a hold of the word, Napus says its pronunciation started to change.
The big confusion, though, was when the French came in. A lot of those names were mistranslated because basically they couldn't pronounce them.
Many scholars trace a European adoption of the name Wisconsin to the missionary and explorer Father Jacques Marquette. Valentine says the change came after he traveled across Wisconsin from Green Bay to the Mississippi River with fur trader Louis Joliet and two Miami Indians as guides.
He recorded this word as their word for the Wisconsin River. They themselves were refugees here in Wisconsin. There was lots of turmoil in the 17th century.
So then where did the W come from? Valentine says that came from a simple misreading of the text.
There was a famous mapmaker, and he showed the name to LaSalle, who mistook the first two letters, which were just this very flamboyant M, as O-I, which he interpreted as we.
Over time, as more English speakers settled into the area, the French spelling was changed to the more English W. Napus and Valentine agree that knowing where the name comes from is powerful.
If you're a language speaker, you should know what that means by breaking it down. And that's the importance of language, because if you don't have that quality, then you're just reciting.
When we recognize that this state's very name comes from one of the languages of the country's first people, it will perhaps give us a greater appreciation for their place, not just in the past, but in the present.
WPR's Mary Kate McCoy brought us this story. And Josie's question came to us through the Wisconsin Project. We'll hear even more questions from the Mineral Point fourth graders on the Larry Mueller Show on May 15th. Submit your own questions and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on the morning show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@WPR.org, and we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.